This is the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 177. I am your host, Adam Mangum. We're joined in this episode by Spencer Linton of BYU Sports Nation fame. He talks about the big win against Gonzaga, what that means for the Cougars. We preview the WCC tournament, and he also gives us some tidbits from spring football. Matt and I then bask in the glory of beating the number three team in the country. We talk about the tourney chances of the Cougars, both what they might do in the WCC tourney and what they might do in the NCAA tourney. We then talk about spring football, Taysom Hill, who's his backup, as well as the players we want to see really shine this spring. This is the Rise and Shout podcast. You can catch us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. You can always get this podcast on iTunes, and you're going to listen to us right now. The Rise and Shout podcast, our guest today, the man who was originally supposed to replace Richard Dawson as the host of Family Feud, BYU Sports Nation's Spencer Linton. Do you see what I did there, Spencer?
I saw what you did there. Yeah. that was always my dream job, you know, to be a game show host.
That would be a lot of fun. Of course, the Family Feud isn't what it used to be. So
no, oh man, it has fallen from grace.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
It was a great show. But anyway, so Spencer, co-host of the awesome BYU Sports Nation show on BYU TV, BYU Radio, Internet, Podcast, all those different media options people have. But this week, I wanted you to come on, but it ends up being an awesome week to talk BYU sports. So let's start with the Gonzaga game, Spencer, because that's, of course, what everybody wants to talk about. We started this debate last week, my brother and I, about where this sits in, if they were to win, where does this sit in BYU sports wins all time? And where do you think this fits? Is this Dave Rose's best win, top three? And in BYU sports history, is it a kind of top five or... probably have to wait and see how the rest of the season goes.
Certainly, in my opinion, it's top three in Dave Rose's career for sure. I mean, when you're talking about the first time you beat a top three team since 1981 and Danny Ainge is on that team, like that qualifies it to be way up there. And I'd put it, you know, the San Diego State road win in the Jimmer years, 2011, up there as well. Just because it's so tough to win on the road in raucous, rowdy environments like that against highly ranked teams. But man, if you could see the way that they celebrated after in the locker room, like it doesn't happen very often.
Right.
Beating Gonzaga, ending the nation's longest home win streak. And so the celebration I thought was on par with just how big of a win it was for BYU. This is a good team. The team's had to battle through some bad luck, through a ton of close losses, through some injuries. And for them to do that this year and to be peaking at the right moment, I think that makes it feel even that much more special.
Yeah. It's definitely up there, regardless of where you end up ranking it. But we had a tweet bag question on Twitter from Justin Whiting. And he asks, he was generally impressed with, Casey and Holford against Gonzaga. Who is more surprising? I'm going to flip his question a little bit for you, okay. Spencer. If I had told you at half season, even with your blue goggles on, if I had told you that we could beat Gonzaga and in that game, Tyler Hawes would score 10 points and the second leading scorer on the team would be Skylar Halford for the game, would you have believed that was possible?
Absolutely not. I mean, Tyler Hawes has missed a consistency, so if you were to tell me that he scored 10 points and Skylar outscored Tyler on the road in Spokane, with that lineup from Gonzaga, was Wilcher and Pango. So, I mean, they basically, their whole team was all West Coast Conference. So if that were the case, any rational thinker would say BYU has zero shot, but that goes to show you that even though Tyler wasn't on point, the BYU defense and rebounding have been the keys during this six-game win streak. And That's what has allowed them to really kind of find their groove, is they've figured some things out defensively, and they've gotten after it. They've just been noticeably more intense. And so that's a great question. I don't think Tyler will ever score 10 points again in the remaining games that he has for BYU. He'll be up towards his average of 21.9. But that is the most amazing thing, probably behind the fact that BYU led the entire way.
Yeah.
That's just bonkers.
Yeah, and also the other fact that just I'm looking at the box score right now, Spencer, and I still can't believe it. We BYU out-rebounded them by two, despite the fact that, Karnowski was limited in his minutes. That was a coach's decision. He wasn't in foul trouble. But you had Sabonis, all these guys that are big guys, and somehow the undersized Cougars were able to out-muscle Gonzaga on the board, especially compared to the last time they played.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and you're right. Wiltshire is 6'10". Sabonis is 6'11". Karnowski, even though he played limited minutes, he's a monster.
Yeah.
That guy is Goliath in the West Coast Conference. They're huge. They have athletic guards as well. And so for BYU to out-rebound them and move their record to 19-0 when they out-rebound opponents this season, you wonder, is it really that simple? And it looks like it is for this team. It certainly helps to have Kyle Collinsworth, who in West Coast Conference games won the rebounding title, and he's technically your point guard, but he's great at getting after the ball. And then to have Nate Austin and Jamal Ates injured and on the bench not participating in that, that's a huge credit to Mark Pope working with the big men and to Dave Rose and his staff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So we'll go back to Twitter here for a second. You guys had... we're recording on Tuesday night, so on Monday's episode of your show, you, of course, for those of our listeners who don't listen or watch BYU Sports Nation, which they should, of course, but last week, Jerem had said, your co-host had said, well, if they beat Gonzaga, I will shave my head. So he ended up shaving his head, but we got a couple questions. Well, one is from a guy named Jerome Jordan. He asks, who is your favorite BYU Sports Nation co-host?
My favorite BYU Sports Nation co-host?
Yes.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, that's tough.
You know...
Brian Logan, right?
I'm going to have to go with Kevin Nixon.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
The one time he hosted with me.
Yeah, there you go.
It's Jerem, man. I mean, he's old reliable. He is, the dynamic between us... it works because
it does.
We were very different, but it's almost necessary for the dynamic of the show and for things to kind of operate and tick the way that they do. But he is, I don't know anybody that is a more thorough thinker, and it's hard to find somebody that wants to get to the nitty gritty and the details and is willing to do all that to put on a great product. And Jerem's work ethic is just unparalleled. He's got that producer mentality and it helps him that way. And so, I'd be a fool not to say that it's not Jerem.
But here's the thing. Both times you've been on the show, he has trolled you on Twitter to basically give him praise. So that was very nice of you, Spencer. I'm going to say that Jerome, that's a Twitter foul to send your co-host that question. But that's fair. Now, Justin, he says, Jerem said, when is he going to shave his head too? Justin Sweeney has a great idea on Twitter. He said, that's at Justin D. Sweeney, if BYU opens up the 2015 football campaign 4-0, so are you going to commit to that right now, Spencer?
Here's the thing. I committed earlier today on BYU Sports Nation that if BYU basketball on the men's side goes to the Final Four, I will shave my head.
That seems like not as realistic as what Jerem did.
Listen, if they win four games in the NCAA tournament, they'll be in the Final Four.
Well, this is true. And the first BYU team to ever do it.
Now, here's the thing. With Taysom Hill as the quarterback, him coming back, and he's super motivated, and just knowing knowing what this offense is ready to do and wants to do. And we were laying out the spring depth chart, and I'm just looking at the offense going, holy cow, it's, you know, a year older, a year wiser. Everybody's back. I mean, you lose Paul Asike and Jordan Leslie, and those guys were major contributors last year. But I feel like BYU has the personnel that they can have people step right in and accomplish what Jordan and Paul did. And
yeah,
so
yeah.
I don't think that BYU is incapable of winning those four games with Taysom Hill at the helm and Jamal Williams. I feel like they have a great shot. Like, yes. I don't think that Nebraska will be that much of a favorite. I think they'll have a great shot against UCLA because they lose Brett Hundley, their quarterback. And Michigan is on the rebuild, and they get Boise State and Provo without their quarterback coming back. And so those are big name teams, but I think that BYU is in a good place.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you. I think it's all the offense will be good. The question with Bronco back at the defense. Well, let's hop back to basketball, and I'll get you out on a couple of spring football questions. So
perfect.
With the tournament, I know you guys are going to have awesome coverage from Las Vegas coming up this week, so everybody tune in for that. With the tournament, as you look at that bracket, is there any team not named Gonzaga that makes you nervous for BYU on BYU's side of the bracket, or is it basically them and St. Mary's and there's not really that much else to worry about?
Here's the good thing about BYU getting into that number two seed, which who predicted that, by the way?
Gosh, did you predict it?
No.
I don't think anybody predicted
it. Sure.
Last week on our podcast, my brother Matt and I said, well, it's still possible for BYU to get the two seed. And then we started laughing out loud. Like, well, but it's not possible with quotes. So, but go ahead. So the good thing about them getting the two seed.
Oh, yeah. So as amazing as it was for them to slide into the two seed, now they're in a situation where they play the winner of a 7-10 game, and that 7-10 winner is going to have played on Friday night. So they're automatically against the rest of BYU team, which is the run-and-gun team in the West Coast Conference that plays at elevation. They're going to have to go up against that Cougar offense and try and contain them. And so I don't think there's any way that Santa Clara or Loyola Marymount, who, by the way, BYU matches up very well with this year and
right.
have dominated, can beat BYU. I just don't see any scenario where BYU loses that quarterfinal. St. Mary's is an interesting case. I would be more worried about St. Mary's, but they're kind of limping into the tournament. They're a little unsure of themselves on a neutral floor with BYU playing with a lot of confidence. You know, anytime you have a guy like Brad Waldo and Kerry Carter, like those guys, they can do some things, but I just feel like BYU's depth on a neutral floor is greater than that of St. Mary's. So I feel like BYU is in a very good spot being that two seed. Now, if they were the four or the five, though, and they had to play Pepperdine or San Diego, we're talking about an entirely different situation because those are the two teams that gave BYU problems this year. San Diego obviously beat them down there, and then BYU had a tough time kind of putting San Diego away there at the very end in Provo, and then Pepperdine swept the season series. And so it all worked out for the Cougs. And I, you know, if BYU sees San Diego or Pepperdine in the final, then that would be fun because it would be good to, perhaps exact some revenge. But I think the chances of that happening are very, very slim. And they just beat Gonzaga on the road, so why not beat them in Las Vegas?
Yeah, yeah. And for St. Mary's, Matthew Dellavedova is not walking through that door help them this postseason. So,
he's dishing out dimes to LeBron.
By the way, it's disturbing to me that here we are several years later, and Matthew Dellavedova gets minutes in the NBA, and Jimmer does not get as many. It's like we've gone into bizarro world. But so let's flip back to spring football, which you talked a little bit about next year. One of the things this year is going to be, it's going to be about who's the backup to Taysom, because he's now, you know, had two seasons where he's ended the year injured and missed significant time. Is this something we're going to actually find out in spring ball, or do you think we won't actually know because of the two freshmen. We won't actually know who the backup is until fall camp.
I would be shocked if McCoy Hill or Hayden Griffiths are the backup quarterback. In fact, McCoy is banged up, and they have reached out to Christian Stewart and lined up an agreement for Christian to come back and quarterback the rest of spring football for BYU. It is an unbelievable, unprecedented situation. I've never heard of anything like this, where you have two incoming freshmen, one coming off a mission, one still in high school, your star quarterback is still rehabbing, and then your fourth-string guy goes down. So they have Hayden Griffiths, who is a walk-on and is a baby in the BYU football program. So go to old reliable Christian Stewart, who, oh, by the way, is still enrolled at BYU, which is why he can participate in spring practice, and they can do that. But when the season comes around, I am very confident that the depth chart will be Taysom Hill, Tanner Mangum, and Bo Hodge, followed by McCoy Hill. I'd be shocked if it were anything different.
Yeah, well, and you are correct. It's a pretty unprecedented situation. Is this, you know, a couple of media folks that cover BYU have criticized the coaching staff for not going out and getting a JC quarterback. But the flip side of that, of course, is you've got maybe the most celebrated quarterback recruit BYU's ever had, or at least in that discussion, coming back from his mission, as well as Bo Hodge, as you mentioned before. Do you think they made a mistake by not going out and getting a JC guy who could come in and do that, or do you think at this point, what does it really matter? They'll have Hodge and Mangum in the fall, and quite frankly, if Taysom gets hurt, this season's probably hosed no matter who the backup is.
I'm just going to hold out faith that Taysom is able to stay healthy for this team, for his coach's sanity, and for everybody that roots for BYU. I don't know if they can handle another significant injury. But I don't think they made a mistake. The thing that, you know, I can't talk in detail about is I'm privy to some things with the coaches and the coach staff in terms of recruiting and what they're trying to do. They made some efforts to try and get some things in JUCO wise and whatnot, and it just didn't work out for whatever reason. And so it's not that they weren't looking or doing or trying. Like, the effort and the work was there. Some things just fell through the cracks, and that's why we're in a very unique situation when you look at BYU football, because you have injuries, you have a missionary, you have a high school guy, and then you have your four-string guy get injured, and a couple of JUCO prospects not work out, then this is what they're facing. And quite frankly, they're lucky and fortunate that Christian Stewart is willing to do something like this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, he was maybe the best story from last year, in a year that was, in a lot of ways, kind of a lost season, at least from the expectations that were put on the team early on. So switching away from quarterback, which, by the way, it's good to see Taysom Hill up and throwing the football and mobile, as he seems to be a little bit. Let's talk about other players who might make a difference this year. Justin Sweeney, again on Twitter, asked about breakout players this year. He mentions Hines, Warner, Kurtz, and West. Do you think there's a... I'm quite frankly looking for one of those linebackers to Warner or Lange or somebody to kind of pop out there too. But do you think there's somebody that's on the edge of breaking out, and a year from now we'll be talking about what a special season they had?
I'll give you a couple, one on offense and one on defense. On the defensive side, I'm with you. I think the linebacker position, particularly Fred Warner, is growing so fast in terms of understanding how Bronco Mendenhall wants his defense run. And he's got that freakish athletic ability. He's twitchy like Kyle Van Noy and can make up a lot of ground in a hurry. That closing speed that Kyle Van Noy had, Fred Warner has shown some flashes of that. And he's just a motivated kid. He is excited to be a part of the BYU football program. and he's buying into the system, and it's linebacker you, for crying out loud, underneath Bronco Mendenhall. And how many different guys have gone to the next level and received accolades at linebacker for BYU? It's the list grows longer. And so I think Fred Warner is going to receive some big-time opportunities and a lot of reps, and he's going to be a beast. You know, I from what I've seen from him and what I hear from the coaches and just my own personal eye test, he looks like a next-level superstar. So I think Fred Warner, going from his freshman to sophomore year, is going to make major strides. On the offensive side of the ball, it's a shame that we didn't get to see Nick Kirk play last year, because he was the guy in fall camp that maybe of any player was having the best fall camp. He runs precise routes. He has speed that is underrated. And his stride, he catches the ball at its highest point, you know, which some BYU receivers have struggled with in the past. He goes up and he gets the ball. And so to have him healthy, and Taysom Hill trusts him a lot because he's a smart, witty player, and he's a guy that's got reliable hands. So I think Nick Kurtz is going to have a great year, and it's almost kind of lucky for him that he didn't get to play last year, because the first few games of the season, they don't have tape on him. Like, they're not going to know about him, and that'll give him an opportunity to really shine early, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm with you on Warner. I think he made major strides in the last few games last season that kind of showed. I mean, after looking lost at times in the middle of the year, he made some major strides. So I feel pretty good about him as well. Well, Spencer, tell us a little bit about the coverage that you guys are going to have in the WCC tournament, just so for our listeners, if they don't tune in as often as I do to your program, can know what BYU TV has in store this week.
Oh, absolutely. For a fifth consecutive year, BYU TV and BYU Radio teaming up with the West Coast Conference and ESPN to make sure that all of the games are broadcast to a nationwide audience. BYU TV specifically will broadcast 8 women's games, including all of the quarterfinals and 2 semifinals. And then they will broadcast 4 men's games as well, the 2 play-in games, 7-10, 8-9 games, and then 2 quarterfinals as well on Saturday. So 12 games in total. We'll have bridge shows, halftime shows between all of our coverage. BYU Sports Nation will be live every day at 9 Pacific, 12 Eastern from the Orleans Arena. Just it's all access, unprecedented coverage, and we're happy to do it on BYU TV. So looking forward to another crazy week, and hopefully like last year, both BYU teams are playing on Championship Tuesday. That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I think the women have a little harder road to get there this year, but you never know. So, well, Spencer, thanks for coming on the podcast. As always, we appreciate it. And don't shave your head. You have much better hair than Jerem. I would say shave his head with him. It doesn't really matter. But you've got much better hair, so don't.
Thank you. Nobody wants to see me with a shaved head.
No.
Trust me, dude. Nobody wants that.
I shaved my head in high school, and I will probably never do it again. Bad shaved head. So, well, thanks, Spencer, and we'll, of course, check you out a lot this week on BYU TV.
And no problem. Keep up the good work.
Rise and Shout podcast time. I'm Adam. You're Matt. We're brothers. That's probably the only intro we need, right?
Seriously.
So Matt, I don't really have an open for this week's podcast, because the only thing I want to talk about is how awesome BYU sports is right now.
It's seriously, this is like, it feels like the golden age.
Yes. After being in the pit of despair.
Really though.
With football, and then a 5-4 first half for BYU basketball in WCC play. Here we sit, Matt, on a glorious Tuesday evening, after which the BYU basketball Cougars beat Gonzaga, the number 3 team in all of the land. And then spring football starts this week.
Yes.
And pictures of Taysom Hill throwing a football.
Hey, if that doesn't bring a smile to your face, there's something wrong with you.
I completely agree with you. So let's get to it, Matt. There's no time to mess around and talk about movies and television shows and other non-cougar related items that we like.
Bunch of nonsense.
Nonsense. Today is a well, that's not true. I was about to say it's a nonsense free podcast, but that's ridiculous.
That's nonsense.
Yes, that is the only nonsense. But Matt, let's get right to Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News.
You're a little delayed there. You all right? A little slow.
You caught me in the middle of a sip.
Aha, you're trying to get a little beverage drinking in.
That's right. I was prepping my instrument here for.
Did you just call your voice an instrument?
Maybe I did.
I think that might be overstating it a little bit. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. So we weekly have been talking about the men's volleyball team. They swept, and by swept I mean they didn't drop a set in their two matches against ranked number 13 Ball State. Though they did, some of the sets were actually close, but a very impressive weekend by the men's volleyball team. They now go on, and Price Jarman and Matt Underwood were the two stars, but there's lots of kudos to go around. Matt, they do not have another game match at the Fieldhouse until UC Irvine comes on Friday, March 27th.
Yeah.
So road contests against Stanford and Pepperdine. Ugh. Sorry, just basketball flashbacks. So Matt, they are now ranked fourth in the land. When we originally talked about them after they had beat, I forget which, it was UCLA, right? Was our first discussion after they beat UCLA a month and a half ago. Both of us said they're probably a year away from national title contention. Matt, do you feel differently now?
Oh, absolutely. Team is in the hunt. This team is in the hunt.
Yes, they are rolling. I think that on the road match, two matches and splitting the two matches with USC, several weeks ago was kind of it, and then just blasting Long Beach State and Ball State the last 2 weeks.
And Ball State, I thought Ball State looked pretty good.
Yeah, no, like I said, the 3-0 match. If you don't look at the box scores, you go, oh well, they absolutely destroyed them, right? But you look at the game scores and you go, oh well, actually, it wasn't a complete destruction. There were some close sets in those matches, including in the first one and Saturday night, 28-25-22, 25-23. I mean, those are could have gone either way, but like you said, they're in the hunt, man. And Brendan Sander is not quite his brother yet, but is also looking really sharp. And he wasn't even playing earlier in the year. So
Well, like any team over the course of a season, right? There you get a little bit of evolution there.
Yes, absolutely. So we won't get to see him on TV again until UC Irvine on March 27th. They'll be back on BYU TV, but we'll of course be following their games online. So Matt, another Cougar in the News piece. Bronco Mendenhall addressed the media yesterday. We're recording on Tuesday evening to open spring practice. And of course, one of the questions was about discipline from the Miami Beach Brawl. Matt, 10 players will be disciplined. He did not say who or how. I think I know where you stand on this, but case closed as far as you're concerned. I mean, we're going to find out if anybody got suspended for part or all of that Nebraska game. Are you satisfied with his answer, or are you in the camp where some people said, well, he needed to tell us who and what?
I'm satisfied with his answer, mostly because I wouldn't even say mostly because of this, but I think this next point should probably help some of those other folks feel better about it. We're all going to know who it is when they don't play in the Nebraska game.
Yes, when they're held out of the first quarter or the first half or the entire Nebraska.
Or don't travel, right?
Or don't travel, so yes.
We're all going to know who these 10 players are, and I think that I think Bronco made a couple of really strong points. He's trying to protect his players, which he's got to do. He wants to handle this internally. And the other thing is, why would you give that up now? Why would you tell everyone right now?
You don't.
I mean, and then that becomes the whole story for the whole summer. Everyone will talk about, oh, well, so-and-so and so-and-so who were suspended for the Nebraska game or whatever it is. I think you take as much air out of that as you possibly can. Bronco Mendenhall will handle this behind closed doors, and I have no doubt that these players will get the point.
Oh, yes. It was clear from his commentary yesterday that discipline is going to – it was clear he was disappointed in the behavior of his players. And he should be, right? We talked about this after the brawl. Somebody comes after you, it does not necessarily justify you going after them. And then, of course, some of the cheap shots that BYU players delivered. Now, granted, it was going both ways. But anyway, so hopefully that story, by the time we beat Nebraska in September, will be dead. But I'll tell you what, if it's key players and they're out of that game and we lose, this story, unfortunately, will continue living.
Oh, it will live on, yeah.
So, Matt, let's move on to the victory against Gonzaga.
Oh, should we just bask in the glory for a minute?
Just for a minute. Just can you feel that? Can you feel it? The warmth?
It's awesome.
So how long did it take you to calm down and get to sleep on Saturday night?
I didn't even know what to do. It's like I wasn't sure. I really felt like I might have dreamt it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because remember, on the podcast last week, if you recall, which I'm sure you do, we were both, like everybody, pretty positive Gonzaga was going to beat BYU.
I didn't really think BYU had any chance.
And you remember I jokingly said that BYU had a mathematical chance at being the second seed in the WCC tournament. Do you remember me saying that?
Yeah.
And then we kind of laughed because it was ludicrous that BYU would actually be the second seed in the WCC tournament, because not only did they have to beat Gonzaga, but of course St. Mary's had to lay a complete egg.
Yeah.
Right? And St. Mary's laid their egg. They lost to Santa Clara. And that was them laying their eggs. So Matt, let's get back to the Gonzaga game though, because that's really what we want to talk about. Tell me what your two keys to this game were. What made the difference between a victory and a loss against the number three ranked team in the country?
Well, for me, I look at two moments in the game that I feel like really set a tone.
Okay.
And they're very similar moments, but the first one I would talk about is the opening points. Chase Fisher's three-point shot to open up the game. You know, we're about 30 seconds in, scoring the first points of the game. I think that set a tone. BYU took a lead. They did not relinquish. They did not trail at any point. And I feel like they started off right, and they started off with good momentum that carried them. The second moment that I feel like was a really big deal was that just below the 17-minute mark in the second half, you know, we went into the half tied, and it had been close for the first couple of minutes of the second half. And you know, it kind of where it'd been within a couple of points of each other. And then at 16:49, Chase Fisher hits another three-point shot and puts BYU up 45-40. And I feel like it was from that moment out that they held a pretty solid lead, you know, 4 or 5 points up until the last couple minutes of the game. And I think being able to manage that lead and staying out in front like that, that really for me made the difference. And those are a couple of key points where they were able to set that tone to keep that lead.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are great points, Matt. For me, two of my key takeaways from this game, you went moments. So I'll go a different direction. Skylar Halford, 27 minutes, 14 points, second on the team in scoring, 2 of 3 from three-point line. You mentioned Chase Fisher. Those two, 5 of 10 from three-point line. I think that was a big, big difference. The other big difference to me was the defensive effort. We held one of a team that is, quite frankly, as good as us offensively. They don't play quite to the same pace. But if you look at, you know, if you break it down statistically, they're every bit as good as we are, maybe even better when you adjust for competition. And we held them to 44% field goals and out-rebounded them. To me, those are the two, you know, I would not have predicted. And if you had told me that we'd win after Tyler Haws scored 10 points in the game, I would have told you you were nuts.
I never would have bought that, ever.
So it was a stunning, there were a lot of stunning things about that game that were awesome. But Matt, let's get to a moment that all of us would rather not relive, that only is now okay to relive because it didn't end up costing us the game. So Tyler Haws gets up. We're up with 6 seconds to go. BYU's up by 3. And he gets up to hit, he gets fouled on the inbounds, gets up there to hit free throws, and he misses both of them.
Yeah.
You, on this podcast several weeks ago, I don't remember which episode it was, we were talking about the all-time greats at BYU, and you said Tyler Haws needed his moment in order to kind of really be in that conversation with best ever, because he hadn't had that moment. So, Matt, this was not that moment, because hitting free throws probably is never going to be that moment, right? You need some type of shot or whatever. Matt, does this hurt his legacy? Or because BYU won and Andrus hits the free throws to put us up by 3 with 2 seconds to go, is it all under the bridge and forgotten?
I think it's under the bridge and forgotten in a bad way when you're talking about Haws' legacy, right?
Right.
This was an opportunity for him to make that statement. You know, and in one of the biggest wins in program history, certainly one of the I think you could very quickly argue biggest win of the Tyler Haws era. He wasn't really a factor.
No, he was not. I mean, 31 minutes, but not his usual game. Go ahead.
I felt like at halftime, I said to myself at halftime, I said, you know, if we're really going to stay in this and win this game, Haws has got to really just tear it up in the second half. And the team was able to pull out the win without that, which I think says a lot about the team. You know, and I think that's good. But it certainly doesn't give Haws his moment or his signature win or signature game.
No, it certainly doesn't. Though he still has a WCC tournament and hopefully an NCAA tournament ahead of him to do that. Kyle Collinsworth, Matt, 20 points, 8 boards, 3 assists, a couple steals, fouled out, ridiculously fouled out. WCC refs are terrible. Great game for Collinsworth. He certainly was a big part of BYU's victory, including that offensive rebound late in the second half that made a big difference. Matt, a guy's stat line, if you know, you look at just points, even though for him it's a lot. Corbin Kafusi, 7 points, 6 boards, 3 blocks, 2 steals, a couple of just incredibly athletic blocks, too, which, you know, guys thought they had a clear path to the hoop and then Corbin met him. Between him and Halford, who's the biggest, and maybe it's Winder or somebody else, but who's your biggest surprise player as far as how much they've ended up contributing during this 8-1 run in the second half of WCC play?
Well, there's a couple of different ways to look at that. I think if you go back and think about where we thought this team was at the beginning of the season, I don't think anybody saw Corbin Kafusi becoming who he's been the last few games. I don't think you expect him to contribute, mostly because I don't think you didn't think he would need to. But some things changed and somebody needs to step up in some of those roles, right? And he's been able to do that as of late. So for me, I would probably say that's the biggest surprise if I think about it in terms of at the outset of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And Halford went from really, in a lot of ways, not being a factor at the beginning of the year, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was not somebody where you said, you know, yeah, he's playing a big role on this team. You know, if you look at early on, you know, he had some stretches where he hardly played, and yeah, where he was a minor factor. And then since Winder's been hurt, he has not just, you know, I was afraid that, yes, he's going to get more minutes, but he's not going to be able to contribute what Winder was contributing. And the answer is yes, he was able to deliver very close to that. And then now that Winder's back, now all of a sudden you've got a player that's playing meaningful minutes. And as I've said all along, he's a max effort guy, right? You always, mm-hmm, you root for Skyler Halford. If you don't, again, to your point earlier about if you weren't, you know, excited about that win, if you don't root for Skyler Halford, I don't know what's wrong with you. I mean, I did not think he would contribute like he has this year, but I hoped he would, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a max effort guy. You got to love those guys. He's never dogging it, right?
Right.
But that being said, both of them have been nice, pleasant surprises so far in this back half of the year. So let's do a tourney temperature check, Matt. Where are you at? Lukewarm, warm, hot?
I'm warm. I think the win in Spokane does a lot. You know, you got a 23-win team with a signature win late in the season against somebody who everybody had slated as a number one seed.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I feel like that's pretty good.
Yes, I think it is. Very, very, it's an awesome, one of the biggest, and we've talked about this many times on the show, one of the biggest problems is they did not have a signature win until now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those out-of-conference games that could have been that either have not ended up being as impressive as the season went on because the teams like Stanford aren't as good as we thought they'd be, but also the teams they could have beat, they didn't, right? San Diego State being one that could have been their signature win up to this point. Now, all of a sudden, it is definitely the signature win of the season.
Yeah.
So Matt, if they win out, but then lose to Gonzaga in the WCC championship, percent chance they're in the tournament?
They only lose one more, and it's in the championship game.
Yes.
Is it a close game?
Yes. So far, they've yet to get blown out this year. So I think it's safe to say it'll probably be a close game.
I think they're in.
I agree with you. Right now, Lunardi has them in. And the thing is, it's probably about 50-50 on the bracketologist guys. I actually think they've got a better shot than what a lot of these guys think. I think that the committee really loves you playing tough out-of-conference schedules. And BYU did, you know. And they're peaking, right? And the committee likes peaking. So I don't know. I give them a really good shot if they do that. Now, Matt, what happens if they lose before that or get blown out?
If they don't make it to the finals, if they get blown out, maybe. But if they don't make it to the finals, I think you're at that point. You know, you've taken the excitement out.
Yeah, I think if they don't make it to the finals, they are at the mercy of a bunch of other things happening. Their destiny will no longer be in their hands, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think if they make it to the finals, that then they have made their case that I think is strong enough to make the tournament. I mean, right now, Lunardi has them a 12th seed doing a play-in game against Colorado State. You know, of course, whatever Lunardi is projecting is not going to be totally right. And, of course, we still have conference tournaments to play, so there's going to be a lot of chaos on these brackets.
Yeah.
between now and then. Matt, what do you think after watching that game against Gonzaga? Is this a kind of 12th seed that fifth seeds, say BYU does get a 12th seed, that fifth seeds are going to be like, oh, crap, I do not want to play them in the first round?
Yeah, I think this is not a team that you want to play. But just if you go back to the point you were just making, they're peaking at just the right time. They're coming off of a big win. If they have a solid outing in the conference tournament, they come in there rolling, and this is a team that could knock out a fifth seed.
Yeah,
they'd have it in them at that point if that's the way that the cards fall. So yeah, I wouldn't want to play them as a fifth seed.
Yeah, this is BYU, and I've read some and heard some national guys talking about this because of the way they play, with their reliance on the three-pointers and having a couple of star players. They're a team that could win even two games in the tournament, just based on if they're hot, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now that they can play defense, the thing is, the BYU team playing these last 6, 7, 8 games is not the same BYU team that played the rest of the year. They actually play defense now. And before, they basically just had to outscore their opponents, which... you know, it's fine when you're playing some mediocre competition, but against good teams, that can get you into a lot of trouble if the three-pointers aren't falling. But, man, I'm still basking. Are you still basking?
Yeah, it's still pretty awesome. You know, I was kind of glad there weren't games right away, right? And you want to just kind of enjoy it for a minute.
Yes, you do. So, Matt, we are about to predict, as we typically do, every game of the WCC tournament.
Awesome.
Are you ready?
Oh, yeah. We are completely unqualified to do
completely.
This.
Well, that's not true. We've seen every single one of these teams play.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
All right. Santa Clara versus Loyola Marymount, the game that will decide who BYU plays. Who you got?
I got Santa Clara in this game. Come on.
They're rolling after that win over St. Mary's. Then the 8-9 matchup, San Francisco and Pacific.
That one's a little bit tougher.
I'm going with the Dons.
Yeah, it's San Francisco.
Do you want to know why?
Why is that?
Two words, Bill Russell. Nothing to do with this game, but he played for San Francisco.
Okay.
All right, so then on Saturday, the four games in order of when they will be played. I did that because BYU plays last.
Well done, my friend.
St. Mary's against Portland.
I really don't think Portland can pull this one out. This is a St. Mary's win.
Gosh, I am tempted to pick the upset here because St. Mary's is not playing well. But I'm going to go with St. Mary's. Then BYU, we both picked Santa Clara. I think BYU beats them in a rout.
Yes.
Rolls over them. Gonzaga against... I didn't do it in order of when they're played. Ah, well, whatever. Gonzaga against... we both picked San Francisco. Gonzaga kills them, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be out for blood after losing that game to us. And Pepperdine and San Diego.
I'm picking the upset here just because I feel like I need to pick one.
I also want San Diego to win to take Pepperdine down. Take them down. We certainly, not that they'll make the finals, but that's a team BYU does not want to see again.
Yeah.
It's a really good thing we didn't slip down into that 4 or 5 seed territory because they seem to have our number this year. So on Monday,
I wonder, am I just picking that one for that reason, do you think? Is it just this subconscious thing?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not in your subconscious.
Wow.
Thank goodness.
That got weird.
Thank goodness. I'd like to stay out of there. So we got BYU, St. Mary's on Monday night, the final. Who you got?
I'm taking BYU over St. Mary's.
I think we roll them. We are rolling. We are a better team than both times we played them. It's going to be a different, and they may not be as good as when we played them earlier. Gonzaga versus San Diego, I think we're both going with the Zags.
Yep.
So Tuesday night, the 10th, 6 p.m. Pacific time on ESPN, the worldwide leader. Who you got?
I got BYU.
I got BYU too!
I think this is Tyler Haas' night right here, March 10th. This is the signature game.
And then you don't have to worry about Selection Sunday.
It's over. It's done.
You know you're in.
I mean, look at what they did with 10 points out of your all-time scoring leader, and you win the game. You know, if Haas gets in a rhythm in that night, if they can get him on, I think BYU wins this game.
Yes, I agree. The one caveat to all of this, of course, is there's a very low chance that that Pangos has the kind of game he has, and Whittier has the kind of game, Wilshire has the kind of game he had. They were a combined 5 for 23.
We play defense.
That is true, but they're going to play better, right?
Yeah, you're right.
They're going to play better, but I do like. I think we're rolling, and it would be awesome. Are we both picking with our blue goggles on? Yes.
Oh yeah, I'm picking with my heart here.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. If let me pose this question to you then, Matt. If they beat Gonzaga, they're not doing a play-in game.
No.
They're not probably
Gonzaga twice. You beat Gonzaga twice like that, right at the end of the season?
And by the way, Gonzaga then probably may not even be a second seed.
Dicey.
Which I, by the way, would think is unfair. But it is what it is. Then BYU might be a 10th seed.
And you know what? I like that. I like that better. I think you get a much better matchup there, right? So
yes. I like being a 12th seed if you don't have to do the play-in game. Because in theory, if you can beat a 5 seed, then you got a 4 seed to beat next. I would love to see us not have to do that play-in game.
Yeah, the play-in game is tough. You know, it's one more chance to it's one more hurdle to stay in, right?
Yeah, one more hurdle, and then you have fatigue, injuries, other things that then hurt you against that that 5th seed matchup. But anyway, Matt, we'll be back sometime next week. I'm not sure when we're going to be podcasting or how we're going to do it, but we'll do it somehow because we're professionals. Oh. Dang it.
It will be done.
It will be done. So, Matt, let's switch to spring football here and finish off with a couple minutes on spring football. Taysom Hill is practicing.
Yes.
Not fully practicing. All right.
He's Superman.
And Christian Stewart is the backup.
What? How did that happen?
Well, because they don't have a backup.
Hey now!
So, you know, just had Spencer Linton on. He talked about Christian Stewart's participation in spring practice, which is very bizarre because, you know, he's done, in theory, has no more eligibility, but can still participate as an enrolled student. But, Matt, I mean, isn't this basically, this is the sign, the backup quarterback come Nebraska is Tanner Mangum or Bo Hodge, right?
So McCoy Hill?
No.
I mean, what's going on? I mean, what happened?
He's banged up, but he's not. He was never the answer, right?
Yeah.
He was never the answer. So, you know, it's gonna be bizarre. But let's not talk about. I mean, the quarterback thing is what it is, right? But what three things are you looking for to see? What do you want to see? And it maybe it's not three things, maybe it's two, but what things do you want to see in spring ball that will make you feel more confident going into fall camp?
I want to see a healthy Nick Kurtz. I'd like to see him really, really perform in spring ball. I think that he has the potential to be a very significant weapon for this offense. And so I'd like to see him come back strong. The other one is I'd like to see. I know they're holding him out a little bit. He's not going to be a full participant. I want to see Taysom get through this without any setbacks. Okay, and I think everybody feels that way. And the last thing is, you remember when Bronco Mendenhall first took over as the head coach, and when you got into spring practice and fall practices. There was all this, you know, you had players quitting the team because the practices were so hard. You had players, you know, talking about how tough this was, how tired they were, how he was wearing them out. I want to hear stories like that. I want to hear that these coaches are just wearing these guys out and working them just working them to death. That's the kind of vibe that I want to be getting out of as a fan. Those are the types of things I want to be hearing out of this camp.
Yeah, and new strength and conditioning coach, so maybe that's maybe that will be more the case. Matt, we talked about this with Spencer already, so I'm going to be repeating myself a little bit. I want to see linebackers step up. Supposedly, we've got a lot of talent there, Fred Warner, Lange, others. I want to see some of these guys make the leap. We are both on record that we're very glad that Bronco is taking back control of the defense, but he also needs guys to step up and play and make plays. And, you know, the talent seems to be there. The question is, will they be able to deliver on that? I also want to see on defense just what you said about maybe some players getting upset about how hard the practices were. I just want to see the discipline. You know, Bronco talked about it yesterday in relation to potentially the Miami Beach Brawl. I just want to see guys doing their assignments on defense, staying in their lanes, doing what they're supposed to do, because a lot of our defensive problems in the middle of last year had to do with guys not doing that.
Yeah.
And that is something that's got to happen. I think it will. I feel good about it, but we need to see that. So Matt, let's finish this off. We haven't done this in a while. Let's do some answering machine.
Answering machine.
This is a game where I explain it. It makes absolutely no sense, but folks will get it as we go along.
Yep.
So here's my explanation. You ready? I've been practicing. Okay. So the way this game works is one of us will pretend to call the other. And the other, person B, see, it's already getting convoluted.
Yeah, what was that? The other person B? What?
The other person will be somebody that's famous or involved with BYU sports. And then that person pretends to be, and never mind.
The wheels just came off.
Anyway, I'm going to call you first.
All right, you call me.
I'm going to call you first, and then you will give the message of whoever I'm calling. Are you ready?
Once again, you've managed to confuse me. I'm not sure what's about to happen.
I am calling you.
All right, go ahead. Is that? You're not calling me. You're calling somebody else that I'm pretending to be.
Correct. All right, here we go. Ring. Ring.
Hi, you've reached the voicemail of Skylar Halford, the guy on the BYU basketball team that really nobody cared about a year ago. Anyway, I'm busy being awesome, so leave a message after the beep. Maybe I'll call you back. Maybe I won't. Beep.
Skylar, man, I'll tell you, you have been key to us the last few weeks, and really appreciate it. I was on record in this podcast earlier in the season saying if you were getting meaningful minutes, that was bad for the Cougars. I am ashamed of myself, and I owe you a big apology. The good thing is you've never listened to this podcast that I have and have no idea who I am, and you'll delete this message and be like, who was that nut job? But anyway, great job, and keep rolling in the WCC tournament. Peace out!
You did say that earlier, but I don't think anybody was going to disagree with you at the time.
No, I think, and again, it was never mean-spirited, right? I like him. I wanted him to do well. I just thought, you know, based on his performance last year, where he was so streaky, it just was, you know, if he's playing a lot of minutes, I thought we were going to, it meant Winder or somebody was hurt and he wouldn't be able to deliver, but he has. Mm-hmm. End of story, right? He has delivered. So
he has absolutely delivered.
All right. Call me or who I'm pretending to be.
Boop, 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 boop.
Thanks, R2-D2. Go ahead. Sorry. Interrupted.
Boop.
You have to do a ring in any. Phones ring.
Really? We're still doing that?
Yeah, we're still doing it. It's part of the bit.
Wait, what year is this?
Your cell phone still rings. What are you talking about, what year it is? Fine. Give me one ring.
Ring, 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 ring.
Hi, you've reached the cell phone of Nick Howell, defensive coach for the BYU Cougars. If you're calling to leave a message and saying how much I suck, I've got lots of those, so you don't need to leave that message. Point taken, BYU fans. We all get that you'd be a better defensive coordinator than me, or so you say. But anyway, I'm out working hard trying to whip this team into shape, and if you are one of those obnoxious fans, I'm not calling you back. Thanks. Beep!
Nick! Coach Howell! This is awkward. Hey, listen, at the end of the day, we just want people to be where they're supposed to be when they're supposed to be there to make the plays. We didn't get there last year. That could be any of a variety of things. I think you do have something to offer here, but at the same time, you know, I think that when you've got one of the best defensive-minded coaches in the country as your head coach, you know, you've got to be willing to let him step in and do his thing. And I think you're willing to do that, and that's admirable. So good luck this season. Let's go get him. And we'll be cheering for you until when and if the defense doesn't look very good, in which case everybody's going to be jumping on the hate train. So, yeah, good luck with that, and we'll talk to you later, but probably not.
So, Matt, Nick Howell to me is in an impossible situation.
It's right? A lose-lose. He can't win.
Because if the defense is good this year, Broncos going to get all of the credit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it will justify everybody in their hatred of him. Hatred's too strong a word, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The flip side is if the defense doesn't improve, everyone's still going to say, well, what does Howell bring? Right,
haters gonna hate.
Broncos gonna get a lot of flack too if the defense doesn't improve. Matt, is that the biggest storyline next year? Is it bigger than Taysom Hill's health? The defense needs to be better than the mediocre defense they had last year.
I think that the if the defense is mediocre to bad, then yes. If the defense is good, nobody's gonna talk about it.
Yep.
The story will be Taysom Hill.
Yep.
If the defense is not just getting ripped apart, they won't be the story.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree with you. Unless they are historically good, right?
Mm-hmm.
They will not be the story, even if they're a top 25 defense.
Nope.
Which, if they're a top 25 defense, there is a chance at going undefeated. I don't think it's a good chance, but you know, at that point, If the defense plays like they played last year, there is near 0% chance of making out of those first four games without two or three losses.
You know, and yeah, and it's a tough spot if you're Nick Allen. It's a tough spot.
Yeah, and I don't think he's all to blame, but it's
I don't
hard
know
to
if
know.
I'd say I don't. Yeah, that's hard to know. I don't know if I'm willing to say anybody's all to blame, but I think there is something to be said for the argument that. You know, we need to get out of the mindset of bringing in offensive and defensive coordinators who are cutting their teeth at BYU.
Yes, I say that's a fair point.
I think Nick Howell is a very talented guy. I'm not going to get into his high school coaching record. I'm not really interested in that because that has nothing to do with why he got his job at BYU.
Nor is it that particularly relevant to me, honestly, because head coach, you know, coaching in high school and being a defensive coordinator at the Division I level, I don't know if it requires the same set of skills.
It's probably not apples and apples, right?
No.
But the problem is you get him into this situation where he comes into the program, he does a few things, and he kind of moves up in the program a little bit quickly, but inside of the program, and gets put into this position, you know, where he's, you know, kind of raised up in as the defensive coordinator, and the idea is that Mendenhall is going to kind of groom him and bring him along, and it didn't go very well. And so now you got to deal with that, right? So if it continues to go poorly and he leaves BYU, where do you go after that? What does this mean for your career? I just think it's a tough spot for him to be in. And then on top of that, he's working for one of the best defensive coaches in the country.
Yes.
And that those are tough shoes to fill.
Right.
Which I guess goes back to this whole thing is you need somebody with some experience to come in there, but it's a tough spot that he's in.
Yeah, agreed. Well,
but,
Matt,
you know, it's big time college football.
Yeah, it's not a low pressure job. It is a high pressure job. So Matt, BYU beat Gonzaga. I just want to mention that again. It's awesome.
Yeah.
The game was awesome, and like you said, leading wire to wire was not anything that any of us really saw. So pretty awesome. Matt, one other Cougar in the News thing that I forgot to mention, because I don't think we talked about it last week, Cody Hoffman signs a 2-year deal with the Montreal Alouettes.
Yeah.
In the Canadian Football League. Wish him all the best, and hopefully he starts, well, he's got a long way to go if he's going to break Ben Cahoon's records, but maybe he can. We wish him the best in his career in the Canadian Football League. So, Matt,
tremendous talent.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've talked about this before. One of the best BYU receivers ever. So, definitely wish him the best and hope he succeeds in his endeavors. So, Matt, we'll be back again next week. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter and tweet at us what we got wrong or did wrong on this show, @BYU_RiseShout. Email us, adam@loyalcougars.com, matt@loyalcougars.com, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!